Raising a child with a disability can be challenging, both personally and for your marriage. On today's episode, Liz and I welcome Sage Allen to the show. We discuss the stresses and challenges she's encountered with her son who has severe autism. She opens up about the raw realities of day-to-day care and how important it is to make time for both self-care and date nights. She shares tips for other parents who find themselves overwhelmed and exhausted, including intentionally finding the good in each day and reaching out for support systems, including online groups. Sage Erickson Allen has a master's degree in marriage, family, and human development. She taught marriage prep at BYU and marriage enrichment classes for the USU Extension Office in St. George for a few years. She stopped teaching when her first child was diagnosed with severe autism around age 2. That child is 7 years old now and is completely nonverbal with low-functioning autism and ADHD. In her spare time, Sage likes ballroom dancing and writing for her casual blog, SageRelationshipAdvice.com. She also enjoys advocating for people with disabilities and families that need more help managing the stresses that accompany raising a child with a disability. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. I'm Dr. Dave here at Utah State University with Extension, along with Dr. Liz Hale, our licensed clinical psychologist, marriage family therapist. We are aiming to bring you the very best we have in research and resources and tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. All right, super excited about and a very important discussion about the challenges and the joys of raising a child with special needs. So April is Autism Awareness Month, and without a doubt, it can be difficult and put a strains on marriage connection with multiple responsibilities and stresses that go along with parenting a child with special needs. Today, we have a special guest to discuss this topic. Welcome to the show, Sage Allen.
Hello.
So glad that you're joining us, Sage. She mentioned from Hurricane, Utah. We mentioned this is where Sage is coming from. And Sage, let's just start with a little bit of background. Can you tell us a little bit about your family journey, your experience, kind of what the first few months was like when you discovered the challenges with your child?
Yeah. So let's see. It's never fun to learn that your child has autism. I remember it was our first child, and so we didn't have very much experience with what to look for, you know, early signs of autism, but we had a relative who was a pediatrician, and they kind of tipped us off, like, I think something might be up, you should look into this. And at first we were like, no way. He's just taking a little time to learn how to talk. But as the months went by and still no talking, we did start looking into it. And so Luke, my son, was diagnosed around the age of 2 years old. That was back in 2018. And that same month when he was diagnosed, I had my other child, my daughter. And so right at that time, I had a small baby, and then I had a toddler who wasn't developing normally. And so it was a very hard time, a very dark time, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Can't even imagine.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more. I mean, I'm sorry to say, I don't know a whole ton about the, you know, different levels, that type of thing. Do you mind educating us and maybe some of our audience a little bit on the levels of autism?
Yeah. So there's the autism spectrum now, and level one is high functioning, where they can usually speak. They are usually in your general ed classroom, but they need a little extra support. And, you know, they can struggle with the social things, having friends, conversations, asking questions, etc. And that level one used to be called Asperger's. And then you have level two, which is kind of in the middle. I think the definition is that it needs moderate supports. And those children can still be talking a little bit, but they're not having conversational speech. For example, the child could be saying the word water over and over and over again. They can say words, but when you ask the child, hey, what's your name? They don't say anything. They don't have a conversation with you at all. And that can still be considered nonverbal somewhat because they're not verbally able to communicate with you. And then you have level three, which is the most severe and needing the most support.
Okay. And that's super helpful. I think just as a baseline, kind of foundational understanding, and I might even say right at the outset, Liz and Sage, that everyone's journey is going to look different, right? With the ups and downs and the highs and lows, the struggles, the challenges, the levels, all that is going to be different. And so we appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit about your journey. And I think some parents may be able to relate, and others, you know, they're going through their own journeys and challenges, but I think it's really important to share a little bit about what that is like and let other parents know that, hey, they're not alone in this. So thank you again for coming on.
And where is your son, Luke, in at level one, two, three?
So at first he was diagnosed as level two. And I guess he's
because of speaking mainly, because he wasn't speaking. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Was that what your relative was picking up on?
Yeah, he wasn't speaking. And so he was two. And with a lot of therapies, I mean, they recommend early intervention. You do speech therapy, occupational therapy.
That early? I'm surprised. Yeah. Interesting. That's so good to know.
And early intervention preschool, which, you know, combines a lot of those things to try and get them talking. Anyway, with all of those therapies starting early, that's the hope that they'll be able to start talking, hopefully before the age of five. 5 years old is often the cutoff where they say, if they're not talking at five, there's an 80% chance they probably won't be talking at all. And so our son was diagnosed as level two at first, and a lot of people did think he was going to start talking, but now he is 7 years old. Still not talking. And so I think he's more at like the very low level of level two, the very low end of level two or level three. If we got him re-diagnosed today, he might be more three.
Got it. Wow. I can't even imagine what that is like for you exactly. Can you just tell us a little bit about the day in and day out of being with this beautiful boy? What it's like for you as a mother?
Oh, it's so overwhelming. It's kind of like, well, especially right now that he's 7 years old, it's kind of like having a toddler that, you know, when they get mad, they cry, they lay on the floor, they scream, but he's 7 years old. And so he's that much bigger. He's that much able to destroy things when he's mad, throw things, hit you. And get into things. Like autistic kids are, a lot of them are very good at climbing. I've heard of so many, and we've experienced it myself. So many of my friends, the child climbs over the wall so they can get into the neighbor's pool, you know, scaling like 6 to 10 feet wall, 10 foot wall as a little child. So it's very stressful as a mother.
Can't. I think the only people that would really understand are those who are in the same situation that you are. And even then, like you said, it's quite a spectrum, right? One, two, three, and everything in between. I can only imagine it's overwhelming. And, you know, we hear so much about self-care these days, and self-care is hard for me without children, period. And those responsibilities, how do you take care of yourself, Sage? And it seems like you believe that really is important. That's an important message you want to bring today. Is that right?
I feel like during the first few years, I really didn't do a good job of taking care of myself. It kind of felt like I was running a sprint race where, you know, all the professionals told me you got to get in as much therapy as possible so that he can make as much progress as possible in those early years. And so, yeah, I quit my part-time job. I did lots of therapies. And we just didn't see the progress.
And had a baby in your arms, baby on your hip.
You know, we didn't see the progress that we hoped for. And so I had to realize that I was running more of like an ultra marathon instead of a sprint race. And I had to really slow down, start prioritizing myself and my husband and our relationship before Luke all the time. Because, I mean, his needs are so immediate. It's like if you're not watching him, he might poop and then spread it on the couch. It's very like urgent needs. But at the same time, you have to find a way to prioritize yourself, to get that me time, to get that marriage time. And it's hard.
What are those things you do for self-care in case other women listening really want to know? Can you give them some tips, suggestions, brainstorm?
Yeah. For me, I started hiring a babysitter for my baby when my child Luke was at school. Because, you know, it's harder to find a babysitter for Luke for obvious reasons. But I could find someone for my daughter while he was at school. And so I did that. And then the Family Support Center, which the Family Support Centers are all over Utah, somewhat. I don't know about really rural areas, but they are really great. They give you 2 hours of respite once a week for free.
Wow, good.
And at first I was kind of, and as I talk to people, they are kind of cautious to use them because, you know, they don't know the employees, what's going to happen to my kids there. They're around other kids that I don't know. But for us, I just felt like we really need this. And so we would use it every Saturday for 2 hours. And then my husband and I would go on a date during that 2 hours in the middle of the day. So you just have to do things differently. Think outside the box.
It sounds like it'd be very creative and willing to receive the help. Not that there's a lot of it out there, I understand. We have a ways to go, Sage, yes?
Yes. Utah is very behind on putting adequate funding into their disability department. For example, if I move to Colorado, which that's where I'm from, my parents still live there, and I've thought about moving there so many times. We would, within a few months, receive a small budget to hire babysitters just so that we don't lose our mind and strangle the child or, you know, go to jail for various reasons regarding the child.
We get it.
Yeah, we would receive a small budget and then help for medical expenses too. There's a waiver called the Medicaid waiver for disabled children. And so it waives the parent's income so that the child can get their medical expenses covered. And there's a similar program in Utah, but the wait list is, no joke, about 10 to 20 years long.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Yes.
In other words, it's unhelpful. It's unhelpful.
It's so discouraging. I remember when I first heard about the program that they have in Utah, I thought, wow, that could really save us. And then I heard about the wait list and I was like, oh my goodness, we're not going to last that long. Like our family's going to fall apart. So yeah, right now there's about 5,000 people on the wait list in Utah and it's based off of severity of need. So because I've done so much advocating for Luke, trying to convince our caseworker that he is very severe, this does affect our family in a lot of ways, I've been able to get him further up the wait list. We've been on it for about 5 years, and we're almost to the top, maybe. And this last year, we got what's called waitlist respite care, which is just 1 year of a small budget to hire babysitters. And it just lasts for this 1 year. And it has been a lifesaver, like so wonderful. So I would just say to anyone listening that wants to save marriages of people with disabled children, to call your state legislator, you know, in your area, the representative and the senator, the state senator, and tell them that you want more funding to go towards the state disability department, because there's such a huge need.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. Sage, this is
overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah,
speaking of overwhelming.
Staggering. Oh, this, I mean, this is just so unrealistic.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, very heartbreaking, Liz. You mentioned how it's affected you, your marriage. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about in what ways, right, your child's disability has impacted your marriage, both the challenging and the strengthening? I read on your, and you have a great little blog, your sagerelationshipadvice.com, how you feel like you're sometimes just running on empty. What is that like for you, your relationship? Our podcast, as you know, Stronger Marriage Connection, how has it impacted your connection?
Yeah, a disabled child definitely impacts the marriage every day. You are less likely to be able to get time away from that child, like maybe little vacations. I mean, we have trouble going on vacations even as a family right now. But thankfully, we live in a beautiful place where people come here to go on vacation. So that's what I tell myself. Like, I may be in prison in Hurricane, Utah, but it's a beautiful prison. Yeah. We can go on day trips, we can have fun. So yeah, there's the fact that there's not a lot of people that can handle the child so that you can have a break. But then there's the wear and tear on you personally, your individuals and the marriage, because when I'm around Luke, when I'm watching him, I have to be on high alert. Like, I have to constantly be watching him. If I turn my back or I go to the bathroom for a moment, sometimes he gets the rice and dumps it all over the living room. Like, big things can happen. And so it really does make you so exhausted and burnt out that you don't have a lot of time for each other. And for me, I've noticed the signs of burnout are when I start hating everybody and resenting everybody in my life.
Yeah. So, you're a mere mortal woman after all. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
Of course, it only takes so much. So there's not a program for Luke, is that right? There's not a school, there's not a program he's in a couple times a week. He is always with you.
No.
Or tell me.
No, there is.
Okay.
He does go to school. And so the days when he goes to school for 6 hours a day, I can handle that. Like, I used to be kind of bad at even those hours. I would get overwhelmed, but right now it's no problem at all. If he goes to school for 6 hours, I can handle the day. But there's a lot of school holidays. There's a lot of teacher prep days. There's a lot of weekends. And those are the times when I get really tired. And then during the summer, I know some parents that try to take care of their child the entire summer long. I could not do that. And so we put him in an ABA school. ABA is applied behavior analysis. And so they're looking at trying to shape the behavior of the child. It's a lot like dog training, honestly, where, you know, you do something good, here's a treat. We're trying to shape the behavior in positive ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you see progress, Sage? Is there hope for Luke?
Yeah, I think so. At first, I really didn't think there was. Because he learns things so slowly. You know, we've had an iPad with little buttons to try and say, you know, if you want this, press eat. If you need to go to the bathroom, press bathroom. And he's taken a long time to like kind of get three of the buttons. Mm. And it depends on the day. So,
yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us a picture into your world.
Yeah, it can be very discouraging, but now, especially since we're so close to the top of the state disability list, I do feel more hope.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for you. We'll be anxious to hear when that happens. Please keep us posted. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt through this time, you've had to lean on a lot of support throughout this journey, Sage. What role have support systems played in your life, both as a parent and as a partner? Who has been that support for you?
Yeah, good question. When you have a child that is this hard, you get to a point where you realize that you can't do it alone. And that's a really vulnerable place to be, because when ABA school cancels because of lack of staffing, or when you can't find anyone around you to help out, it feels very scary. It's like, oh my goodness, my supports. What do I do? So it is a very vulnerable place to be. But I've learned over the years that it's a very beautiful place to be, where you actually need the help of other people. Like, you're not just trying to survive on this island in your home the entire time alone. And we've had some wonderful relationships develop where I reach out to a family, you know, maybe with a teenager, and I ask them, could your teenager help us? We've got to pay them. And so we need their help. But then the family, the mom tells me, like, this has been really good for the teenager too. This teenager really needed this positive experience in their life. And so then it becomes like a two-way, a win-win situation. We're both helping each other, and we both need each other in different ways. And so, yeah, that can be very beautiful and can create really great relationships with your neighbors and the people around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with family supports, you mentioned your parents in Colorado. I'm sure you look forward to those visits and other family supports whenever you can get them, right? Look forward, like, plan. Okay. They're going to come and help, and let's, you know, we're going to go out. Speaking of that, I mean, do you almost use that as far as strengthening your marriage? And I mean, what does date night even look like, Sage? Is that even a thing, or a date? You said during the day sometimes with maybe, I don't know what his work schedule is like, where you can actually find some couple alone time, right? Let alone trying to find a getaway for a night. I guess my question then, what strategies do you and your husband use to maintain that connection amidst, you know, and supporting each other through all this?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing has been trying to help our child learn how to sleep. Because on top of how difficult severely autistic children can be during the day, they don't sleep very well at night either, which is makes it really hard. Like, there was an article in the news just a few weeks ago about a couple who went to jail because they handcuffed their nonverbal autistic child to the bunk bed during the night, from like the hours of 8:30 p.m. to 7 in the morning. And I looked at the article and I was like, oh, I totally understand why they would do that.
You would understand. You would absolutely understand.
If they don't have a room, they don't have a room for the child, or now they've got these cubby beds that you can get your insurance to pay for. That's like an enclosed tent almost for the child. They're very expensive. But
and what are they called? Sage, I'm sorry. What are they called?
Cubby beds, I think. Cubby. Yeah, you can get your insurance to pay for them, maybe. I haven't done it. But anyway, if you don't have those supports, then I could totally understand why you would handcuff them to the bed. But
gosh,
sorry, I got off on a tangent. What was the question?
Oh, no, just strategies that you use to help as a couple relationship.
Oh, yeah. So trying to help my child learn how to sleep was the biggest thing. Because, you know, if we could get him down early and he would sleep through the night, which is extremely hard to get to that point, but we did it. And then we have that time for each other. And that's what I hear from a lot of parents with disabled children is after the kids are asleep, that's your time for an hour.
Wow. I'm sure you look forward to that, those times, just that precious time that you're able to have with each other and talk about. And I'm curious, Sage, with those times, I'm thinking that probably what you don't want to talk about, you know, are the stresses. I mean, it's probably what's on your mind and you want to talk about it, but how do you like make time for you and not talk about, you know, the stresses, the challenges and all the craziness of the day and just like, okay, well, let's focus on each other. I'm guessing that's pretty difficult.
Yeah, sometimes it can be. We use, you know, sometimes you can watch a show, get your mind off of it, read books, go on a walk, like something to kind of disconnect from the stresses of the child. And at some point you have to kind of remove or disconnect how your child is doing from your sense of success or well-being.
Oh, yeah.
Because you want to think that, you know, I did this great job. I helped them learn how to talk or helped them learn how to poop or, you know, and sometimes the results just don't come. And so, yeah, you do have to get to a point where it's like, they are who they are. I'm doing my best, but it doesn't mean that it's my fault or that I'm not doing more. That I could have done more. They would have started pooping on the toilet or, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Some of that success might be the feces is not on the couch. That's a good day. Right? Yeah. It just changes, I imagine, what the success is. What your satisfaction is.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a moment or experience that brought you and your husband closer together, let's say, Sage, maybe through the challenge, in spite of the challenge, because of it?
Yeah. My husband and I, we connect a lot through sharing all the weird things that Luke has done that day or the awkward situations that he gets us into. We like to laugh a lot about those things, and that brings us closer together. Yeah.
Can you share one? What was something you both were laughing at that put you in an awkward situation? Does one in particular stand out? There's too many to focus on, maybe.
Yeah, some of them, let's see, like he took Luke to the park one time and he's talking with someone else. So he's like a little bit distracted for 2 minutes. And then he looks back around and Luke's gone. Can't find him anywhere. He's looking around, you know, trying. And then the neighbor who lives across from the park waves him down. He's like, hey, Luke is in my house. He's upstairs jumping on our beds. Like, okay. I'm so glad that this neighbor knew. You know, who like was. But yeah, somehow he just got right into their house, went upstairs, jumps on the beds.
He chose a good neighbor. He has a good, keen sense about him, right? He knew where he'd be safe. And all it takes is 2 minutes, it sounds like. Doesn't take long.
Oh, yeah. They're very fast, these children. And the other problem is autistic children look normal for the most part. And so Luke's big thing right now is he loves to smell people. And so he'll go up to random strangers and want to smell them. And that can be kind of awkward.
It's how he's trained to, I guess, learn, right, about people and what's different from this person to that person. Do you suppose that's it? I don't, he's guessing.
I don't know.
It's a sensory that, well, yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, it could also
so be. So much we don't know. Gosh.
His other parts of his brain maybe aren't working so well, so he's overcompensating with smell.
So this one works really well.
Oh, yeah, like he really goes up to them and just, like, right by them.
Yeah.
Trying to smell. What it is.
That's really helpful for the rest of us to know how to help a friend in your situation to normalize, you know, that their child might smell us or do all kinds of things, come in our home and jump on our beds. that is normal. That is normal for Luke and his family and for all of us.
Sage, what I'm going to play this little pun. What sage advice do you have for other couples who are navigating a similar path in terms of keeping their sanity, but their relationship strong and that connection strong? Do you have advice? What counsel? Look, there's parents who are listening right now and they say, man, I want to hear what suggestions does Sage have?
Yeah, there's a lot of things, but I would say one of the best strategies I use for helping keep my marriage connection strong is the principle of positive reinforcement. I first learned this from Dr. Glenn Latham, and he uses it in a school setting. And he says that if you want to encourage good behavior in children, you should pay attention to all the good things they do, give them lots of praise, compliments, reward the good things, and then totally ignore the bad things that they're doing. That's called distinction. You don't give it any attention. Unless it's something really serious, and then you address that, redirect it to something positive, and then give that positive praise again. And so for my marriage, it looks kind of like this. I try to notice all the good things that my spouse does. You know, when it comes up and in a natural way, give them compliments, praise. But more than anything, you're training your mind to look for that good in your spouse. So in the evening, you can write it down, the good things that you saw. And then you just ignore the bad things, the small annoying things. And then unless it's something really serious that, you know, needs to be addressed. And what happens is you flood your marriage and your brain with so much positivity and love that it's a lot easier to negotiate on big problems that come up. If your spouse feels a lot of positivity and love from you, then they're more likely to compromise, to negotiate on things that you really do need to talk about. Because especially with a disabled child, there's so much problems already in your family. Like the child has trouble eating. They have trouble speaking. They have trouble sleeping. They have trouble playing. There's so many problems and negativity that if you start turning on each other and start pointing out like, well, you should have done this better. You should have watched him better. So then it just, everything falls apart.
Oh. Well said. You really have to stay that much more united, don't you, Sage?
Yeah. And the funny thing is that the natural way to do it, or what most people do, is the opposite, where they ignore all the good things that their spouse is doing. They take it for granted. And then they focus on the little things that they wish they would change. But if you flip that, it really changes everything.
That is great sage advice for all of us. Thank you for that. I think it's really brilliant. What are the resources, the books, communities, practices that you found particularly helpful, Sage? And I understand also, Dave was just saying, you write quite a bit. Tell listeners about your go-to resources and where can we all find out more about you, please?
Okay. Yeah, so I would suggest that everyone try to get some sort of support group in your area. I found most of my support groups on Facebook through like Utah disability pages. And then I've had to create some support groups for myself too. And so I think that if you don't find what you're looking for, you should try to create it where, you know, get a group of people together, maybe look for them on Facebook, because sometimes you can feel very isolated and there might not be a lot of people with your same challenge right around you, but you can look on Facebook to try and meet people and then get together for dinner or something like that.
Are you the one that's mainly gathered, the gatherer of information between the two of you, you and your husband, Sage?
Yeah.
It seems like one person kind of has to spearhead, right? The other one might be making a living for us. And it sounds like you really are the researcher in this.
Yeah. Yeah. For now. Yeah.
For now.
My husband is amazingly good with children, actually. He's kind of a natural Mr. Rogers. And so he, in his church calling right now, he does the children's music. And he loves that. But
Pied Piper, I can only imagine. Yeah.
But right now he makes the money and I do most of the researching and taking care of.
You're a great team. You're a great team that way. I can just hear that. Tell us about the future for your family. What hopes do you have for Luke? What hopes do you have for your family as a whole and your relationship? What do you see?
I don't exactly know what will be in our future. I do hope that Luke can learn how to read someday or learn how to communicate better. My husband has talked about, since he works in construction, that maybe he could teach Luke how to lay brick, like build block walls, something very physical that's pretty straightforward. And then my husband was thinking, I'll just go to work with him every day. I don't know.
A good man.
I don't know exactly what it will look like. It's definitely a very different upbringing for our daughter. And she's neurotypical and she doesn't really have anyone to play with because Luke is so severely disabled. And so, yeah, it's definitely been a different experience for her. I think it'll be good for her.
Without a doubt.
But it's just definitely a unique family situation.
That's a beautiful family. Thank you for sharing your family with us.
Yeah. Sage, before we let you go, thanks again for your time. Your time is so precious. We'd like to ask all of our guests a couple of questions. The first question is this. In your mind, through experience, through all of this, what do you feel like is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
I would say, like I said, looking for the positive in your spouse, because our minds they're like fascinating computers where they will look for the things that we tell it to look for. So if I think that my husband is wonderful, it'll show me all the reasons why that's true. And it will kind of not bring to my mind all the reasons why he's awful. And I think that's why people, you know, when they're dating, they kind of have the blinders on because all they're thinking is, wow, this person's great. Anyway, so yeah, focusing on the positive in your spouse, it really changes how you experience them.
Yeah, it's true. Liz has always often said, yeah, what we focus on grows, and we'll find whatever we're searching for. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it. Another question then, Sage, is what's your takeaway? We call it takeaway of the day. Do you have a take-home message you would like our listeners and viewers to remember?
I'd like to tell everyone that you really can have a great, fulfilling marriage with a disabled child. Like, at first, it feels impossible, and it kind of feels like you'll never be happy again when you have that big of a trial. But then it really does get better, and you can have a great marriage and a great life with this challenge.
Yeah, well said. So good. Yeah, Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day with her?
Oh, goodness. Sage and Dave, well, I was pretty naive, still am, with autism. Thank you for the reminder of the three stages and that Utah has a ways to go. That saddens me, and it also gives me great hope with advocates like you and people who are willing to speak out and speak up for their loved ones or children. With that, I hope things do continue to grow and change, and we become more like Colorado. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, Dave, what's your greatest takeaway from our interview with Sage Allen today?
You know, Sage, you mentioned this at the beginning, and I can't help but I thought about it throughout this process of any kind. I call it the spillover effect, right? When we are frustrated, when we're stressed out, when we're upset and angry, which you mentioned is normal, right? It's normal in any relationship. But man, when you have just this enormous challenge and struggle, you have those really rough days, that it often spills over and kind of taints how we see everything, right? And then we complain about this and that, and we get in my mind, I'm talking about me, I get like mean, you know, and I just, whatever a child says or does, and I'm like harp on that, or my wife or whatever, it just turns me into an ornery, cranky person. But so for my takeaway is more of an internal insight, and that was, I can't be, you know, my feelings. I'm going to feel things, but I've got to learn to feel it, but not follow it, if that makes sense, and not let it spill over into my parenting or into my marriage or how I see the situation or complain about this or that in my life, because it can almost be poisonous, right? And how that spills over. So I appreciate that insight and bringing that to mind. Because wouldn't you say, Sage, it's pretty normal, common for us to, we start feeling all that, and it spills over into other areas of our life.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Sage, again, we are so appreciative. We recognize the value of your time and kind of that alone time that you have. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about your journey and the ups and the downs, the struggles, and ways that you keep a stronger marriage connection. So thanks again.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it has been. All right, friends, that does it for us for another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. Thanks for joining. We'll see you next time.
And remember, it's the small and simple changes that create a stronger marriage connection. Bye-bye for now.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.